Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for March 25th, brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, along with Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Hey, we're just chilling tonight, in more ways than one.
In more ways than two, yeah.
So anyway, spring is on us.
Sort of.
Ostensibly.
Yeah, it's on, and then it's off, and then it's on, and then...
I think we haven't had too many ons. It's been on, off, and chilly again tonight. But we have lots of baseball to talk about, lots of things going on, and so looking forward to it.
You're telling me. I mean, and I spent the day at Tokyo Dome and got to see a major league team. Well, maybe it was a 4A team against a Japanese team. I don't know. I hope they get better. I certainly hope they get better. But we've got part two of the Larry Rocha interview. He's the former Marines front office man. And then we're going to break down the Pacific League. So let's get it going by clearing the bases. All right, so as you know from last time, we spoke to Larry Rocha, the former front office member of the Chiba Lotte Marines for 5 years until 2009. And again, he's got minor league front office experience. He covered Major League Baseball and has a great grasp of the game here. So we're going to pick up the interview where we left off. Now, I hope you guys remember it because it was 2 weeks ago when we had the interview, but... he's a great guy. Great insight into the game. He really was candid with me. I was surprised. I mean, I was taken aback at some points of the interview, both the first part and the second part. What about you?
Well, he hasn't. He's obviously there's some open scars still left from his time in Japan. He's still feeling them.
Yeah.
he's as bitter about some of the things that are done here as he was 3-4 years ago. So, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's really hard when you work somewhere and so many of the people who affect your livelihood and the things you want to accomplish, it's almost as if they're another form of life, and they can't understand language because you just can't communicate with them. You can't seem to do anything on. You can't seem to have any common ground, and it seems like that so often in Japanese baseball.
Well, I mean, sometimes it really doesn't matter what language you're speaking. You never understand the thinking, and vice versa. And you get these looks like you're a Klingon, and the people are wondering how long it took you to study Star Trek to get the Klingon language down. I mean, because they look at you like, have you lost every marvel that you ever had?
Yeah. Well, that's actually the normal response of most people speaking with me, so I haven't noticed it all that different in Japan.
It's really? I have the same problem.
I think it's just a matter of, this time I'm speaking in Japanese or English about things in Japan, and I get the same response, so I don't know.
All right.
Anyway,
well, yeah,
let's
pick up the interview where we left off and get into some issues behind the scenes in Nippon professional baseball. Tell me now, what would you do to improve Japanese baseball on the field, in the stands, and in the front offices?
Well, it starts from the top down. The first thing that has to happen is that the league has to aggregate the rights. They have to aggregate the TV rights, the internet rights, the marketing rights, the licensing rights, and they have to recognize that a 12-team league will only be as strong as the weakest team. The high tide will lift all boats. They have to get together and have, you have to have an objective, then you have a strategy, then you have tactics. They have to agree on what their objective is. Do they want to be a world-class baseball league? Japan has so many world-class products, televisions, electronics, they love anime now. There's a lot of cultural things that are global. They export all their world-class products, but the one thing they don't export is their baseball. Their assets are being stripped away because, guys like Yu Darvish and Ichiro Matsutaka, they're leaving because they see bigger challenges, higher salaries, more fame overseas. Mm-hmm. Why hasn't Japan ever made an earnest attempt to export its baseball product? I think it's a very exciting game. The fan experience is awesome. In some ways, Japan is the number one baseball country in the world. If you consider that, so, yeah, they're the number three economy now, but in reality, Japanese citizens have the second most. You know, the individual Japanese still are the second richest people in the world after Americans. America has professional football, hockey, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, X Games, college sports, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In Japan, there's really only one sport. It's baseball. The distant second is the J League. So when you take a country of 126 million people with very high amounts of disposable income, and there's really only one sport that they care about per capita, Japan is number one as far as a country where people think about the game and actually have a disposable income to spend on that game.
Mm-hmm, I'm with you.
It seems like a bizarre thing that they haven't figured out how to redistribute some of the teams. Put, you know, Chiba should not be where it is. The Chiba Ultramarines, their stadium should be right at Chiba Station. And the Cebu Lions shouldn't be where they are. They should be right, like, at the big station in Saitama.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely idiotic that they're in such difficult to access locations, and there's other parts of the country that would die to have a team. And if you just did some common sense realignment and spread some teams around into more dense population centers, and then had a deal where they had regional and national TV and deals, and then really shared all the internet rights and struck up legit licensing deals. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that once they can get their own house in order, then they could probably start to expand throughout Asia, and then we could have a more legitimate conversation about a true global major league. I mean, you know, we used to get frustrated. I used to get frustrated. Why doesn't Major League Baseball consider expanding over here or merging or competing? But the reality is that MLB is, in 20 years ago, Major League Baseball had 26 teams, and their league-wide revenue was $1.2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And Japan's revenue was $1 billion with 12 teams. Now, last year, 30 MLB teams had $7 billion in revenue, and Japan is still flat at like $1 billion in revenue. It's a completely crazy thing. And so for MLB, they're on a, you know, 500 levels higher than Japanese baseball. Japanese baseball is shrinking. It's becoming less and less relevant, and they're going to have to do something different, or else they're just going to have to beg for life support from Major League Baseball, ask Major League Baseball to come in and take over, run the league. It almost seems like that's what Kato Commissioner wants, that he went from being the Japanese ambassador to the United States to now being Yomiuri Giants ambassador to baseball. And he's not really making any strides towards creating a really strong league. Like, his big accomplishment is that he got them all using the same baseball. So, like, now the Central League might announce starting pitchers, you know, a day in advance. I mean, it's almost like you've got to be kidding. It's like Abbott and Costello. Like, this can't, these are their big announcements. Like, when they see everything that's happening, this is the big progress that they've made. They're using the same baseball, and they might announce starting pitchers a day in advance. Like, what else are they waiting for? You know, and there's other parts of Asia that are starting to play baseball. Japan could be the leader and in creating this true Asian league, but, you know, it, right now that doesn't fit with the Yomiuri Company's narrow marketing strategy. All they're trying to do is get TV ratings for one TV station and sell a couple newspapers, and so they just can't see the value in the Cebu Lions being in a, you know, in a better stadium, in a better location. And I'm rambling a lot, sorry, but
no problem. I understand your frustration. We have similar questions for the commissioner, similar questions for the league. The vision, we always question that, but we'll let you go on this question here. You know, you worked with Bobby for quite a while. I'm sure you guys are still close friends. I see your posts sometimes on Facebook. What do you think the Red Sox are going to do under him this year?
I think he's going to do a great job for the Red Sox. He already is. It's incredible to think about those schmucks that pushed him out of Lotte 3 years ago, and now he's managing one of the premier teams in the entire world of sports. He's so far so good in spring training. Coverage has been incredible. Everything he's doing and saying has been outstanding. I think he needed to take 2010 off to recharge his batteries. 2011, he was itching to go. There were a couple opportunities that didn't work out. This is such a great fit. It's the first time in his career that he has been the number one guy at the number one team, not just in the city, but in the entire region. When he managed the Texas Rangers, they were, you know, kind of a minor league team in a football-crazed state. He managed the Mets after 6 years of losing seasons. They were, you know, second fiddle to the Yankees, who won the World Series in 96.
Mm-hmm.
Second, you know, behind the New York football Giants. There's so much going on in New York. And then, of course, Lotte is like, you know, a USFL team compared to the NFL. And so now the Red Sox are obviously just such an obsession for so many people. I think Japan prepared him because of the craziness of the fans and the dedication and passion of the fans. And so I think Bobby's going to make a seamless transition to dealing with the passion and expectations of Red Sox fans. I think they're going to love him because they're going to see that nobody cares more than he does. Nobody takes a loss harder than he does. And with his intelligence and his experience and the work that needs to be done with the Red Sox and the team building that has to take place after last year, I think it's going to be a great, great run. When Joe Torre was hired by the Yankees, the famous back page headline was Clueless Joe for the New York Daily News in 1996. He had been fired 3 times. He had a lifetime losing record.
Mm-hmm.
And now Joe Torre will clearly go to the Hall of Fame. Bobby doesn't have a lifetime losing record. He had a lot more success coming into this stage than Joe Torre had when the Yankees hired him. And I think this is going to be a golden age for Bobby. I think I don't know exactly what they'll do this year. I'm sure they'll be great. And I see, like, you know, one or two World Series for him in the next 3 or 4 years. I also see one more time. Maybe I'm crazy, but I believe he'll manage in Japan one more time. And what I'd love to see is him do the Red Sox for 5 or 6 years and then come back and manage the Swallows or the Tigers or the Bay Stars or I don't think the Giants would ever hire an American manager. Although if they're going to hire anyone, you know, he might be one of them. But it would be really cool to see Bobby go back to Japan one more time after a great run with the Red Sox. And then, because I know in his heart he still wishes he could have done more for Japanese baseball. He did great things for the Lotte franchise, but he wanted the league to get better. And I think maybe in 5 or 6 years there will be an opportunity for him to come back and then really push things across the finish line. And, you know, I'd love to go with him at that point.
Sounds good. All right. Well, thank you for your candidness. Thank you again for joining us, and you can get back to watching basketball or whatever you're doing. Thanks a lot for joining us, Larry.
Thank you very much, John.
Okay. Incredible insight from Larry about the league and its failures to take advantage of the obvious opportunities here. I mean, not only the money, the TV, the internet, and the other rights that the teams, from what he called the number two baseball product behind the big leagues, but the lack of growth, you know, and income in NPB. I mean, we've complained about so much about the lack of, you know, foresight, and basically he pointed to the Giants as the reason for the sport, you know, not being a world leader in this economy. I mean, your thoughts? I mean, he really laid it out there.
Well, he did, and I don't agree with everything that he says, and I do understand when, you know, as far as saying that the Japanese teams are, and I don't speak the same language. I mean, I understand where they're coming from when they say they have no money and everything. You know, they're all losing money, so how can we do anything? That's the reason for everything is we're not making any money. So how can we spend money if we don't have it, if we're just hemorrhaging it? And, yeah, it's very often it's a catch-22. And Larry goes out and he says the Giants are the problem for everything. And I think what he said was very poignant, you know, to put it at the highest level, the fact that the Giants don't care about what kind of, the Giants have absolutely zero interest in what kind of stadium and what kind of market the Cebu Lions are playing in, because they don't see that as their business, and this is a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when he said the idea that the high tide lifts all boats, and I thought, yeah, I mean, sure, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and it makes sense for all those teams to draw well and be popular, so that when certainly they can't all win,
right,
and they can't all be successful at the same time in terms of their one loss record, but they can be successful off the field. They can be successful with how they deal with rights to TV. they can be successful with how they deal with the internet and the opportunities that are out there to generate some income or some
revenue.
That's the word.
That's the word.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me either that the Giants would not care, but I'm not sure that, I mean, it's one entity. I think if the entire, let's say the other 11 teams wanted to do something, I'm sure that, you know, they could force or not force, but compel the Giants to comply and move things in a different direction if the Giants weren't so strong.
Yeah, well, I think the Giants' strength is, of course, the Giants' strength used to be in the fact that they kept, you know, they paid their broadcast rights, paid essentially the payrolls of most of the rest of the Central League. Not their broadcast rights, but the revenue generated by home games against the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
Now they're a case of, well, we're in the same league with the Giants.
Yeah.
And that's not quite as strong as it used to be. So I don't think the Giants' power is what it was. And they have influence because they do have cash flow, which a lot of these teams really don't.
Mm-hmm.
So they can do what they want with a lot of their money.
Well, that was stunning to me. The lack of growth of income of MPV is flatline basically. I mean, it's not growing, and that scares me because you look at the teams and you look at how much, you know, like teams like the Buffaloes, even who went through and revamped and changed their uniforms, let's say, and then when the Kyocera Dome opened up, they started playing some of their games there. And if a team like that is not making it financially, how can we expect them to bring in good players, you know? Yeah. And same with all the teams, the lesser teams that don't win, the Hiroshimas, the Yokohamas, how do they afford to bring in quality players, whether they're imports or whether they're, you know, they're paying their stars? And yeah, the answer is they don't. They bring in marginal guys and hope that they can teach them the finer points of the Japanese game, and then we get what we get, which is them finishing in the lower half of the standings every year.
Yeah, there are serious issues. I had a discussion a couple of weeks ago with some people. I think the major issue is control. Everything is about how much control that one company wants over the future of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the principal issue, because it's never about, you know, the Pacific League is doing joint marketing and they're doing this and that, and they're getting small checks.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the amount, but they're getting checks from Pacific League marketing.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting income from that. And this is something eventually, you know, I think this is something that eventually the Central League is going to catch up with. You know, it'll be the next thing. Oh, they're working together. We could make more money if we work together.
Right.
And you know, it'll be, you know, step to step. Eventually, because I think that the Pacific League is the leader, you know, in all the, you know, I know they don't like to talk about it. I know Toshimasa Shimada says, look, we don't want to.
He's a fighter's guy. Fighter's
so he's the head of baseball operations, and he's above the general manager. And he said, look, we don't want to make a big deal about PL marketing because we don't want to keep, you know, showing the Central League that, you know, we're doing all these things. We don't want them to just get irritated with us.
Right.
We just want to, you know, do our stuff. But I think the Central League's going to be copying them before long.
Well, you know, in a group-oriented society, you would think that all these teams would be working for the benefit, you know, working together for the benefit of the group, like Larry said, but they're not, and it's really odd that they break the cultural string when it comes to the baseball teams like this.
No, I think they're following right along in the cultural string, because most Japanese groups are for the benefit of the group, but they're also extremely hierarchical within the group.
Mm-hmm.
And those positions are not always flexible. So the current group of pro baseball is run by the Giants, and they're not into democracy. This is not a very democratic group. This is if the Giants are getting most of the benefits from this group, then there's no reason for them to change. Their view is probably not that change will make the group the pie larger, but that change will see somebody replace them as the top dog.
Mm.
Because that's the way groups work in Japan. They're not groups of joint contributors who share to some degree equally in the profit.
So it's the big picture. You can't look at the group. You have to look at the group within the group, and then
the strata within the group. Yeah.
Well, and then of course Larry had good things to say. I guess he really showed his loyalty to Bobby Valentine.
Which was never questioned, Larry.
Not at all. And you know, yeah, Bobby's a great guy. He's a very successful manager here. He's probably going to have success where he is right now with the Boston Red Sox. And most of that will come because the Boston Red Sox are a talented team, not because of anything in particular that Bobby's doing. Of course, you know, the big leagues, the games haven't started yet. We haven't gotten to see what he's going to do on a day in and day out basis and how he's going to impact the team. But yeah, Larry's made a good point that he's had a better winning record, or he had a winning record when he took over a team that is a major market.
Right.
And better than Joe Torre when Joe Torre took over the Yankees. And he's expecting big things and even talked about him coming back here, which I don't see. But
I do.
It'd be nice.
I would never rule that out. I think if Bobby is healthy enough, I think he would do it. I think there's no doubt in my mind he loves Japan. He loves, you know, we share this view, you know, that Larry shares and the people who love the game here about how much better Japanese baseball can be. Now, there's a limit. Larry talked about top down, change from the top down, but in Japanese baseball, so many of the problems are bottom up, basically high school, junior high school, college kids whose only instruction is to do push-ups, run, and throw. And this is not, you know, this is part of the problem.
Well, yeah, I would like to see, what are the teams he mentioned?
Swallows was one.
Hiroshima.
Sure, Bay Stars.
Yokohama.
Yep.
I just don't see it, and I don't see it because, not because.
Things can happen.
Yeah.
I just can't predict what team it would be and what the circumstances would be. But those kind of circumstances do come and go.
I can tell you this. Yeah, it would be really good for the cart because this is the one thing I remember about Bobby is that he was really passionate about getting the game on a grassroots level, growing
sure.
there. Right. And I really think that's a great way because, you know, I talked to a guy who has a son who plays baseball here, youth baseball. And he got mad one time because this is the father who got mad because
right.
he said the coaches were telling the young players to swing down on the ball and try to hit the ball on the ground
right.
because they had a better chance of getting on base than if they hit the ball in the air.
Right.
And you know, his immediate reaction was to get mad. And, you know, that's probably a good way to teach kids in general, but you know, you have to let each pitch and each swing and each situation dictate how you're going to swing, not.
That's a dog bite. Yeah, I mean, just people think, I swear, when I played, it's a drill, and I said, you're not swinging level, and they said, yes, we are. A level swing is actually a swing that's going up, because the ball is going down, you know, and the ball is going down, and your bat is going down, you've got two intersecting lines, I don't know what's level about that.
Yeah.
These little things, dictates or dogma or whatever you're going to call them. We have them in America too. We have them all over the place. We have them everywhere. And mm-hmm. Japan has its share.
Yeah,
and not necessarily, it can be really, in some case, the dogma can, or the doctrine, let's say, to be on a more positive note, can enable people to do things because it frees them of worrying, you know, thinking about what the policy is going to be. Everybody knows this is one of the things is because there's so much doctrine in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much of everybody more or less knows what's going to happen. There are very few surprises in a Japanese baseball game.
Except when Ochai's managing.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that.
In a playoff situation. But yeah, even then, you know that he's going to do something. So it's
right.
not a surprise anymore. Yeah,
exactly. Well, I mean, but I'm just saying there's so much standard procedure and so much is ridiculous, but the fact that everybody knows what they're going to do, it's like a manager can be too smart for his own good. If he's looking for minor advantages, he can throw out, you know, he can seek every possible matchup to get every minute edge
mm-hmm.
that he sees. And in the meantime, leave his team in tatters because nobody can anticipate what's going to happen next and what the roles are going to be and, you know, what kind of rest they're going to be on. So, you know, you can, some of the advantage of doctrine is that it takes away all that. It's why managers giving players understandable roles that they're challenged by and comfortable with
mm-hmm.
is so important. So Japanese players have this massive, massive comfort zone that they get from running and throwing and doing push-ups for 20 years.
Well, now there were a couple more points that I wanted to touch on. One was the fact that he talked about teams like Cebu and Chiba playing out in hard to access places, which I fully agree. I mean, and I don't actually live that too far away from Cebu Dome, and it's not that bad a trek for me. But every time I go out there, and especially since I've been doing this job in 2005, and I see the rows and rows of empty seats, it has always irked me that a team that's that good draws so few fans on a day in and day out basis. And you know, Chiba is far as well, and Yokohama's, you know, I guess it could be a little bit closer to Yokohama Station, so that's easier.
I think Yokohama's not.
But it's not that bad.
Yokohama's right. You know, it's two stops from Yokohama Station. You can get places going a number of different directions. It's more or less, it's a minor hub.
It's not so bad. I mean, I'm just saying, it could be. If it were closer to Yokohama Station, it'd be a little bit easier. So
the Marine Stadium, I mean, it's a little inconvenient from the station itself, but Makuhari is not the backwater it was when they built that place in the late 1980s,
mm-hmm.
when it was just Bayside on the convention center.
Yeah, but Tokorozawa, I mean,
Tokorozawa's the end of line.
I remember the first time I went there, I think somebody asked me for my passport, and I went through border control. It was so far.
Yeah, I lived even farther out than you did. I used to ride my bicycle up there. So,
but I think those changes could be made. I think that's an idea, that, you know, moving Chiba to a easier, more easily accessible location would help.
One of the issues there is this disconnect between teams and the total product. Because when the Fighters played in Tokyo Dome, their best crowds were when the Lions were there.
Mm-hmm.
There would be more fans would go to watch the Lions play the Fighters at Tokyo Dome,
mm-hmm.
than would watch the Lions play, let's say, the Oryx Blue Wave at Cebu Stadium.
Right, because all those Cebu fans who live downtown could easily get to Tokyo Dome.
It's easy if you're in Ikebukuro and you've got a direct line to Cebu Stadium on an express. It's still easier to go to Tokyo Dome.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay, so anyway, the end of that story, or I should say the punchline, is that everybody asked, the Pacific League continued to ask, how come Cebu doesn't play home games at Tokyo Dome when it's open, when it's available? And Cebu would have loved to play home games in Tokyo Dome. When the Fighters moved, Cebu would have loved to play home games at Tokyo Dome. When the Fighters visit and hold games at Tokyo Dome, they would love to have the Lions as the visiting team. But here's the pinch. They cannot.
Mm-hmm.
When it was their home park, they could host the Lions. Now that it is no longer their home park, they no longer have the right to invite whoever they want. The Lions are not available because of the internecine warfare between, you know, the sibling rivalry between these different companies who are involved in baseball outside of baseball. The two of the big real estate development companies in Japan are Kurakuen Group.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's Yuraku. Anyway, the company that owns Tokyo Dome and Kurakuen Amusement uh-huh. Park is a big real estate developer, and one of their big rivals is the company that for a long time owned Cebu, I'm going to say Kokudo mm-hmm. Land Company,
mm-hmm.
and they were bitter rivals and enemies. So regardless what was in the best interest of everybody, they wouldn't do it because they were business rivals. So,
the end.
Exactly. So this kind of thing is not just, you know, what's going on with Yomiuri and, you know, and all this other silly stuff. It's all over the place. It's deep into the fabric of the way Japanese baseball is developed.
And then Larry talked about, moving on here, he talked
yes.
about the unrest that was going on in the front office there with Setoyama. He calls Yoneda a crazy lady. And, you know, we heard stories about her. You heard stories about her. You heard stories about what was going on with Bobby Valentine in his last season there. And the whole thing was just a mess.
It was pathetic. It was pathetic. Essentially, the Marines spent, there's a couple of things, the owner knows, or he never, he said, Bobby said he was never asked, but the owner knows Bobby wanted to stay. Bobby would have worked there for nothing.
He would have
done that, but there was no way he would have been allowed to work there for nothing. He was out. That was, and the Marines then spent, the worst thing was they spent the entire 2009 season trying to get to recapture as much of Bobby's salary as they could by trying to antagonize him and break the terms of his contract and forfeit the remainder of his salary. That was the Marines' front office campaign for 2009, was to essentially cheat the fan by throwing away the season in the hopes that Valentine would either A, quit, or get so frustrated that he would criticize the team, thus breaking the terms of the contract.
Yeah, cheat the fans, cheat baseball.
It's the worst. It's the most pathetic excuse of a season that possible. It's worse. Take the 1919 Chicago White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a break. These are choir boys.
And they, you know, all to get rid of a guy who had foresight, insight, and who really wanted, he had a vision for the game in Japan and how to develop it and how to grow the game and how to make the game more valuable. And, you know, to the public, to the people playing it, and to the people watching, and they just wanted him out, and that was that. It was a real mess. I don't know, you know, like I said, I don't know. I don't see him coming back to Japan. I hope he wins a World Series with the Boston Red Sox, because that means it's another year that the Yankees don't win it.
Well, I hope he wins the American League East, because he's sensitive to the fact that he's never won a division title.
Uh-huh. Well, good luck. I mean, you know.
Never finished first in his division, ever.
Good luck. I just know it was a mess over there, and that team is in a shambles, and I'm not really. We'll get to it when we do our PO breakdown, so why don't we just go on?
Although we're talking about the Red Sox being in a shambles.
Oh, no. The Marines. He left that team in a shambles.
The Marines! Okay.
Marines. So yeah, let's get to our PL breakdown. We're gonna go in alphabetical order again, which means the team that gets the love this time, the Buffaloes, as opposed to the Buffaloes.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say the Buffaloes. Okay.
No. All right, go ahead.
Okay, my boys, the Buffaloes. Yeah, team that. What can you say about the Buffaloes? Other than this is a team that everybody thinks should be a good team, and they never are.
Well, let's start with their big additions and their
big in the terms of size.
Big boy.
Idaho.
Uh-huh. Daiho? I don't know. Is it Daiho or Daiho?
I think it's Daiho.
Okay. I've heard Daiho. All right.
And who hit a bunch of home runs for the Lotte Giants. He hit 44 home runs for the Lotte Giants in 2010.
In South Korea. Yeah.
In South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And they got Shimin Che, who's a longtime middle reliever from the Cebu Lions. I think he's been there for 11 years.
Yeah, he's been there a while.
And he had, not surprisingly, a very big season last year for him. It was like so many pitchers were like, I'm young again! I am young again! I can pitch!
With this ball.
That's right. You know, it was like the Twilight Zone. You know, all these old people running up the street getting young. Mountain Youth last year on the pitcher's mounds. Okay, so he got a deal basically because of the ball. Big departures. There's another back Bucks on Che, I think, Jason Buck. Another kind of a broken down South Korean former major league reliever. I don't see much from him. Lee Daho is an interesting one because he's part of Oryx's. I think it must be a corporate strategy of Oryx to look for South Korean superstars in Japan. At one point, this was the quest of the Chunichi Dragons, but they have since given up on it, I think.
I think so.
On to Oryx. So they had Lee Sung Yup in his last year, and they had Park Chan Ho. They've had just about everybody. I'm surprised they didn't get. I think they got every former president of South Korea is probably over there waiting to get on. on the roster because they got everybody else. Okay. Anyway, people there are who are leaving Oryx is So Taguchi, who's really going to be missed. Now, Shinji, he didn't play much last year.
And
he's sort of at the end of the line, but I'm glad he got a chance to come back. Shinji Shimoyama, who, I really liked him in his career, but he's 36 years old now, so it is time for him to become a coach. They're probably not going to miss him since they never knew he was there for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So
they just know him as that guy at the end of the bench,
that's right.
They can't put him in the game.
he was always that guy who was really good whenever we used him, but, let's not, it might be too much of a good thing. Mike Hessman, who if he ever gives up baseball should just start doing radio with that voice. He's got an amazing voice.
Okay.
And was really a real class act. We didn't see much of him last year. He had to battle Aaron Balderas for the third base job in his and that was a tough one because Aaron's real good.
It didn't work out for him. Well, this team just missed out on the playoffs last year by what? What was it, a tenth of a percentage point or something crazy like that? And they addressed the need by going out and getting this guy who looks like the Okawari-kun of South Korea in Lee. He's a pudgy guy, but he's a three-time Triple Crown winner. I look at him, and as chubby as he is, he looks like he really likes to run around the bases out there. I saw him in a spring training game. He decided he was going to run until they threw him out. and which they did, and he just about blew up the base when he slid in. But he's a big kid with all that luggage he carries around. He has a funky hitch in his swing. I think the Japanese pitchers are probably going to be able to exploit it after a while, but maybe he'll make some adjustments after they make adjustments. We'll have to see. If he stays healthy, and Takahiro, I like to call him Tio Okada, is productive, and they have a better offense than they did last year with Aram. I like Aram, what he did last year. He seemed to really settle in as soon as he got a real chance to play.
Sure.
He wasn't worried about getting taken out after having maybe going a week without a hit or something. So I mean, what are you looking for in this team? I like their pitching a little bit. I'm not crazy about it.
Their pitching's a lot like Colts, in that they have a lot of good guys. They have a lot of they got a lot of B plus pitchers, or A minus. I wouldn't say A minus, but B plus in that range. And they're not old. They're not too old. They're not too. On the other hand, they're not too strong and durable either. So I like them. They can beat anybody. Their problem is an issue of going the whole season and having people be consistent for a long time.
Right. I think looking at their rotation, Chihiro Kaneko's he's already been announced as the opening day starter.
Such an amazing pitcher, and he looks like a high school kid.
He looks like an Obasan.
Oh, that's because he's got the crooked teeth going on. His eyes are a little
soft. He puts that little curl on the front of his bangs and all that stuff, and he's just so soft. But, I mean, he's a good pitcher. He's a good pitcher.
This is it, and you have to get over the fact that he doesn't look like a big league pitcher.
No.
But, damn, he's tough. He is just consistently difficult.
He's difficult. They have Yuki Nishi. They have Hayato Terahara, although I don't know what he's going to do for him this year.
A good season for him last year.
Yeah, Evan McLean, Hiroshi Kisanuki, Shinya Nakayama, who pitched the other day fairly well, and Alfredo Figueroa. So they have some guys in the rotation that look like they're going to be able to go, but I'm not sure they have a lot of balance and depth in the bullpen. But, they could. They're probably going to go through, their very, obvious highs and lows, I think.
I don't see overwhelming strengths there. Mr. T. Okada is a hell of, he can be a hell of a hitter, but he's been so inconsistent this year. I don't know if the second year with the new ball is going to help him. He had a real, real bad season last year. I think he's had injuries issues. I don't know. Oryx is an unpredictable quantity. They have the offense is, I have to say, the offense is mediocre.
Yeah, it's middle
of the road. It's gone from fairly promising to they better hope they can score an average number of runs because that's a high ambition for this team.
Well, I mean, they're the kind of team that they look good from a distance, but the closer you look, the more flaws you find. So don't look so closely. And maybe, you know, effort, number one, and the fact that they were on the verge of a playoff spot last year and then guys staying healthy, well, maybe can make a difference for them.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. I mean, they do have some good guys. Sakaguchi is another guy that I always liked with them. Another thing with the Buffaloes is they have had great results. They've had great players coming out of their minor league system. As oddly and as badly run as Terry Collins thought their minor league system is, their scouts get really good players. Now, what they're doing developing with them, I don't think anybody really knows because they don't seem to know what they've got. But when these guys do get a chance, a real chance, these guys from the Oryx minor league system tend to do really well. So it's a scouting thing more than a development thing.
Right.
And there seems to be a disconnect between the team, you know, the team doesn't know how good it is. They don't know what the talent is. It's like organizational insecurity. Anyway, I think that's enough for the Oryx.
We probably did. I often rip the so-called experts because they never take a chance, and they always go with the safe pick. So I'm going to go out on a limb with these Buffaloes, and I'm going to pick them to finish second.
Wow.
I know.
There's some teams that are smart and some teams are dumb, and Oryx is just organizationally stupid. I don't think they will finish second now and then, but I think this year they're going to finish fifth.
Okay. Organization's dumb. They're, retarded front office will stunt their growth.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the Eagles. They're big additions. They picked up Jose Fernandez from Cebu. They got Keiji Oyama in a trade with Chunichi. They got Keiji Uezono in a trade with Hanshin. Fairly useful pitcher. Maybe he'll be useful for them. They got Tsuyoshi Shimoyanagi, a ex-Hanshin left-hander, a grizzled veteran, kind of long in the tooth.
grizzled being the operative word for Mr. Shimoyanagi.
Well, we hope he's not grizzly. How's that? they got infielder Naohito Inada. They got Luis Torero.
And it's Naoto Inada.
Naoto, okay. And the big departures are, obviously, Hisashi Iwakuma. And then a big departure weight-wise was Randy Ruiz. He's a big boy. And then Takeshi Yamazaki, who went to the Dragons. Now, obviously, they're going to miss Iwakuma. Mostly because he was a guy who gave them
confidence. What he did last year, because he didn't do anything last year.
Well, but he gave him confidence. He was a guy who, when he went to the mound, they were fairly confident they were going to have a chance to win. They were confident about their chances to win. How's that?
Well, that really helped.
Well, you know it didn't. I know. But, you know, sometimes being confident is half the battle, you know what I mean? You know, they won some games, even though he didn't win a lot of games for them. They felt good when he was pitching, so, you know, that helped them. But they need offense, and they need starting pitching, and they need bullpen arms, and they need power, and they need speed. But other than that, they have a fine team.
yeah. Well, they need lots of things, yes. I think the big things about the Eagles, one they need Tepe Tuchia to refine his form. He's like, he played last year like the Dragons thought he'd be for the rest of his career when they sold him to Rockton for a couple empty beer bottles.
And a cookie.
Oh, sorry about the cookie. He was quite pissed off. I didn't say that. He was quite upset when I asked if he was released by the Dragons. He said, I was traded. That was my first introduction to him. He was a little miffed.
Oh, no.
Okay. Anyway,
it's pride to be traded for a couple beer cans and a cookie, you know, rather than just being released for air.
Exactly. Okay, so he needs to come back. Ryohei Jirizawa he's on a trajectory where he can be he can be an all-star essentially. Marty Brown saw this a couple of years ago, and I don't think a lot of other people did. I think having Yamazaki Marty was you know, he recognized what Yamasaki's positives were as a player, but he also had a, you know, Yamasaki was cracking the whip in the clubhouse, telling people what they should and shouldn't be, and if young players didn't show the proper kind of respect, he would lean on them. And that was a problem, according to Marty. And Yamasaki being gone, I think is gonna help the Eagles.
Well, I mean, you know, he's batting cleanup for the Dragons.
Yeah,
he's a start. I mean, he's had a good spring for them, but I mean, I kind of agree. But did you know this team, they had the fewest runs in the PL last year, but
yep,
they outscored the Chunichi Dragons 432-419.
Right. Well, the Dragons had a mediocre offense playing in a really, really tough pitcher's park, and then everything else combined made that worse.
I know, but I just find that, you know, really odd. And they scored they allowed 533 runs, which was the highest number allowed in the PL.
Right.
And they only had 53 home runs. I mean, they need everything. But I think they're going to get a little bit more from some of the pickups they got. I'm not sure what Shimochan is going to do for them, other than maybe work the bullpen, or overwork the bullpen, I should say. But I don't know. Ruiz wasn't that productive. I expect Fernandez to be a little bit better. And he should be he might be a stable presence in the lineup, although he didn't do all that well his first stint with that team. So, I don't know. You're right. They have a lot of mediocre guys. They can get hot for a little while, but I don't see them lasting and staying, you know, consistent over a season. And as much as I like them, I love this team.
Right.
I'm not looking for much. I got the rotation sets up like this: Masahiro Tanaka, Makun, Takayuki Shiomi, Tsuyoshi Shimoyanagi, and then Yoshitaka Muto. And then after that, I guess they're going to get some of the import guys to throw, and we'll have to see what they do. Jimenez could be throwing.
Jimenez had some pretty good games last year for him. So
he had some great moments. But
Krasner is still fooling people. So I mean, he'll be the first to tell you that he fooled him. You know, he fooled him the moment he signed the contract.
Yeah, and he did well for them in out of the bullpen. Out of the bullpen last year. So, you know, let's see. I got him. I'm predicting a fifth place finish for the gutty little Eagles.
I think I'm going to go with fourth, and I'll tell you a guy who could have a monster season. I haven't seen him play, but this is a guy. He has numbers that you would expect from a guy who could be really, really good. Doesn't mean he's going to be good. Doesn't mean that. But this is a guy who's been consistently good, and his name is Luis Terrero.
Terrero. Oh, I like the way you say it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like terrorist or anything. This guy is going to terror.
Oh, no,
this
you guy didn't. Could- no, okay. You didn't.
Okay, this is a guy. He was far and away the best player in Mexico last year. Now, what you expect, I take away the Mexican League's numbers, but when you take a guy, and the Mexican League is not a great league, but when you mm-hmm. take a player out of a league, you take a player in any league, and he's far and away the best player, there's really no telling how good he can be.
Yeah.
Now, if he was at 26, he should be playing in the majors. He was 32, but he's got pretty much everything. He hits for average. He hits for, you know, he can run. He can run. He led the Mexican League in runs and RBIs. He was second in batting average and home runs, and he stole 30 bases. So,
all right, dude,
could have something, and I like that.
All right, well, I like it too. I hope he does well. What's your prediction? Fourth.
I'm gonna pick him fourth.
Good luck to him. Let's go to the Fighters in Hokkaido. They added Tamriel Sledge. They got him back.
Okay.
He's back Sledge. From Yokohama, and they didn't really add that much. They got a softballer named Takumi Oshima. I think we talked about him earlier before. He doesn't look like he's going to start on the first team, but he needs the experience dealing with a baseball. He needs the experience. He's a catcher in softball, and he made a big splash. You know, he hit a home run in his first preseason game. No, it was actually with an inner squad game. And we'll see what he does for them. Maybe down the line, but I don't see him really contributing this year. But, you know, get some work on the farm and try to develop him. Obviously, the biggest departure was some guy named Yu Darvish. I don't know.
Oops.
Supposed to be
Taiwan.
Pretty good. Taiwan. And then the other they just let Worf and Obispo go off into the Obispo. And they let Bobby Scales go. Not too much different, but let's not panic all over the podcast now that Yu Darvish is gone. It's just one guy, right? It's just one guy. Yeah, he gave the bullpen a rest every week, and yeah, he won a lot of games, and he ate up so many innings. But, yeah, this team scored, what, the third most runs in the league?
Yeah, they're going to score.
And they probably improved their lineup with Sledge, and, you know, Inaba's moved to the number two hole, and, you know, Michael Hoffpower is probably going to return at some point, and Shonakata has looked good. It looks like a legitimate cleanup hitter.
Yep.
And this will be his year to show it. So I think, yeah, like you said, they're going to score runs. But they're an opening day starter. And some people don't give this much weight. But I do when you talk about Japan and how guys get stuck in a slot high up in the rotation where they're facing other aces or they're facing number two guys. And Yuki Saito, already named the opening day starter, I don't know that he's that kind of pitcher. I don't know that he can last in that slot. What do you think? I see you making faces here.
I do because, one, the opening day slot is essentially for, you know, you're giving a guy another start. You're giving him a chance to make more starts during the season than the next guy. But who he's matched up against is not going to be determined by what number he is in the starting rotation.
Well, you know,
they're not going to say, well, oh, geez, we're probably going to get we're going to be facing Waku. You better throw our ace Yuki Saito out there.
No, I don't think so. I just think
he's turned the pitch.
I think you know, and I know that once you get into a slot, normally, now this is, you know, assuming there's not going to be that many rainouts and all that stuff, that you pitch on the same day every week.
More or less.
More or less.
You're either pitching every sixth day or every seventh day.
And you're either going to face other guys who were put in that same slot, like an opening day starter who's an ace or a number two guy.
Play different numbers of games every week. You know, they play five or six.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'll do this. I'll keep an eye on it this year and see who he faces, and I'll try to document that. How's that?
Yeah. Okay, you get the opening day starters, and then after that, it's fairly random. Okay, then you get after the All-Star break. Okay, so I don't see it as being a big deal. It might, at the end of the season, if you needed a game and there's a lot of open days left, and you can manipulate your rotation a bit, but...
Well, my problem is he's just not that good.
He isn't that good. He's got to be a crafty right-hander now at the age of about 26.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this is a case of the royal jelly treatment. Have you heard of this? what they do with some athletes?
Jelly is, but.
The royal jelly treatment with the athletes essentially, and you guys can look it up on the internet. But essentially, they create an environment that helps or facilitates a player's growth in developing. And
physical?
No, essentially they say, okay, look, we're gonna put you, we think this much of you, and we're gonna show you how much we think.
Oh, okay.
And essentially, you know.
Trying to build self-esteem.
They build up the self-esteem in that respect.
Lovely.
Is that, maybe that's what's going on with Saito, that, you know, he was a high school standout, and you know he pitched okay in college, but I just don't see him.
He was rock solid the first year in college. He then basically took a 2-year vacation, and he came back a little bit his last year, but he lost so much momentum in his career. It was going nowhere. All the guys, I would say a half dozen guys he was ahead of at the age of 18 are now far ahead of him.
Yeah. And including a lot of people in that rotation. I see Saito pitching, Masaru Takeda, Bobby Keppel, Brian Wolf, and then it kind of is iffy. Tomoya Yagi could be a starter, Mitsuo Yoshikawa.
Yeah, might.
Keisaku Itokazu, I don't know. So maybe when you look at that rotation, I mean, there's a couple, three guys who should be pitching in front of him, and then here he is, and then some guys who have been mediocre over the past 2-3 seasons behind him. So, I'm not a I'm not high on the fighters either. I know they're going to be able to score runs, but you can't count on that every day.
Well, you can't, but I'll tell you, I like the fighters for reasons we've talked about, and the reason why I like them is because, one, they're smart. What I see with the fighters, I see the fighters doing really smart things. I don't necessarily, that is not manifest in they're not going over a big foreign hitter. You know, they went with somebody they know, Termell Sledge. They know exactly what he's got. They know exactly what he can do. He's going into his comfort zone. But what I see with the fighters and what I think of them as a smart team, I see the following things. I see, one, they're very focused on scoring runs. Now, this was not necessarily the case 10 years ago when they were essentially defense first. For a long time, they were a defense first team. I think right now, without Darvish, their focus is, A, scoring lots of runs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the advantage of this, as opposed to preventing lots of runs with pitching, as opposed to preventing a lot of runs with defense, is that position players are fairly predictable. They tend to be very stable in terms of what they do over the course of their careers. They develop and then they more or less get better for a while and then they get worse for a while and then they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a bunch of guys and if you have a bunch of young guys, and the fighters have some young guys who are really good, I'm going to say Shonakata and Yo Daikon, also known as in his real life as a Zhang Yongshuo, and Ugumori.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these are guys who can really play. And Yoshio Itoi is a great player.
Have a bona fide man crush on him.
I think we delete that part of the podcast. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah.
So these are guys that are predictable. They know they're going to score runs. Now, the question is, can they play defense? The answer is yes.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
in fact, I think they have the best outfield in Japan.
Yeah, so they're going to play defense. They're going to hit. They're going to score runs. Now, what they got to do is find arms. Now, you can't replace Yu Darvish. Okay, well, you find the best solutions you have. Now, what I do with the fighters is I trust them to make some good decisions, and I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to finish. I think they're going to finish third.
I got them finishing fourth, and I'm sticking to it. I'm not going to renege. I keep promising this. But we're going to come back to this. We're going to come back to this podcast, I'm sure.
You think? You think? You mean like we're going to be here next week?
No, I think
we're going to. Wow, that's so cool, John.
We're going to refer to this podcast because, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Especially when I renege. Hawks.
Okay, the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks were 2 years ago. Well, let's put it this way. In 2011, they're winning the Pacific League every year. In 2010, they barely won the Pacific League. And then they went and they said, geez, how many players could we buy and bring in to make the team bigger, bulkier, better offensively, better everything? And they got all these players. Bam. Then they win the Japan Series, first time since 2003. Then all the players leave. It's like you got all the players by promising them free beer, and then the beer ran out.
So you want to do departures first and then additions?
Right. Okay. So with the Hawks, what we have are DJ Holton. We've talked about this. Toshiya Sugiuchi. We've talked about this. Tsuyoshi Wada. We've talked about him. Munenori Kawasaki. A lot of people will be talking about him. Jose Ortiz. I need to talk to him.
Okay. Those are the guys who left.
Now, we also have Takahiro Mahara, who's going to miss another chunk of the season because of his injury, I think.
Yeah, he's out injured, yeah.
Right? So, yeah, they're not the most stable situation. And, you know, those guys left. I mean, I don't mean to be rude, but Jose Ortiz left. He's a great guy and a good team player and he can play a bunch of different positions. And, yeah, he's not going to kill you in the outfield. But that's another issue with the Hawks. He can play third base. Of course, here's the issue. They don't have any place. They don't need anybody to play anywhere in the infield because those guys just play every game.
Additions. Who are they additions?
Okay. Now, who they brought in? They brought in a big guy, Willie Mopena. He's a very large fellow. And they brought in Brandon Penny, who's a pretty big guy. And they got some guys I'm not that familiar with. Angel Castro, Reniel Pinto. I didn't strike anything special. Kazuyuki Hoashi is a really fun lefty.
Mm-hmm.
He's a side armer with
the palm ball.
Pitch. Yeah. He throws a palm ball and he throws a curve ball, but I think he can't remember whether it's a curve or a slider or a changeup because it just kind of does all kind of weird stuff and he likes to give it a different name about every 2 days. Anyway, he's a very clever pitcher and he's got fairly good stuff. He's not very imposing, but he's a good addition for them. Now, Willie Mopena is going to be really hard. I know. I have to say this. I have to say, get his title right. Former head of baseball operations Itaro Kobayashi said he really likes Willie Mopena's desire to restart his career here to become a new player. Well, it's really hard at his age. He's 29.
Right.
And he has a history of injuries, and he has a history of not being the – well, let's put it this way. I don't care. I'm not too interested in what people say because it's irrelevant. It's mostly irrelevant. But he does have a history of striking out a lot. Players – I once ran through it, did a survey of players in Japan who were successful, and I looked at their minor league stats, and one thing struck me was that – none of the players who were ever successful here struck out in 20% of their minor league at-bats in Japan. The U.S.
Yes,
and Pena struck out in 25%. So that's an awfully big hurdle to overcome. And there were some good players, very much like Willie Mopena, who've been here, and they didn't last very long. Now, I hope he is the exception.
Well,
Brad Penny. I'll finish with Brad Penny, who I think we talked about already. But he's basically in the stage of his career where he's has to become a control pitcher because he doesn't have the gas anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So he's also a guy in transition. Now, if they make these transitions in Japan where they've got all these other things going on, damn, more power to them. Then the Hawks could be really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. I mean. You know, what'd they lose? They lost, 170 high quality innings from Wada, about the same number from Sugiuchi, 100 plus strong innings from DJ Holton. That's about 450 innings of, you know, good baseball. And
sure.
Did they get that value back in those other guys? I don't think so.
No.
So they won 88 games last year. They won the league by like 17 plus games. I think they lost so much they just grabbed at the first tool that was nearby, you know, the first thing that they could get. But I still think the core of the team is good.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to – I mean, let's say they're not as good as they were last year. Okay, that's a given. But is it going to cost them 10 games? Well, even if it does, that's 78 wins. Is somebody going to be able to make that up? You know, who's that team? Maybe, and then they're going to have to beat them head-to-head to do it, and I still think the Hawks are good.
I think the Hawks are a team. I mean, just
yeah, they still have speed. They still play defense. They still have a mean bullpen. They're going to pitch fairly well, and they're confident, and they want to defend their title. I don't think the Hawks are a bad team by any stretch.
Nope.
So, if they get the pop from a big power pig like Willie Mopena, then he's going to help them. Yeah, he's a power pig.
You said it. Go ahead.
That's right. I'll say it again. And I don't know. I'm looking at their rotation like this. Setsu, Sho Iwasaki,
yep.
Kazuyuki Hoashi, Hiroki yep. Yamada, Brad Penny. And then after that, maybe Shota Oba gets some starts. Kenji Otonari, he's been starting. I think Nagisa Arakaki is going to be their opening day guy. And he hasn't pitched on the big team in three seasons.
Last chance saloon for him.
Yeah, well, I mean, but he's been injured. He's been constantly injured. I don't expect him to last that long. But, I mean, he's obviously 3 seasons or 3 years he hasn't pitched on the big team for him. So I see him finishing second. I'm sorry, I got him finishing third. But
I have him second, and I think the thing with the much of what I said about the fighters applies to some degree with the Hawks. Now the Hawks have Mr. President of the owner of SoftBank, Masayoshi Son, running him, and he's nuts about his baseball team. He doesn't know a lot about baseball, however, and so he's got some weird ideas, and one of them is that the team's got to be this and the team's got to be that, and he's got all these big slow guys, and he doesn't have any place to play them. If they jettisoned, if they got rid of a couple of their big slow guys and they let some of these young fast guys play, they'd be better off. Now, the other thing about the Hawks is the rotation is really nice because they have all these guys who are really good whenever they gave them the ball last. They had more quality pitching than they could use last. To be honest, they had more quality pitching than they could use last year.
Yep, I think
so. The loss of these three pitchers is, Michael Westphal loves to say every loss is an opportunity, and I think for no team is that going to be more true. Now, if Mr. Sohn wasn't running the show, well, they wouldn't be able to afford all these big players. But on the other hand, they might have more opportunities. They get rid of jettison some players who don't really have futures. But I like the Hawks. I think they're also a very smart team, other than the compulsion for Mr. Son to do weird things. But I think Akiyama is a terrific manager. I think he's a aggressive guy, and he's also he's like the new wave of successful Japanese managers. He's going to use the young kids. And that bodes very well for this team this year. It bodes well for them next year. It bodes well for them the next 3 years. I'm going to pick up second. I think they can win again, but I'm going to pick up second.
Okay, Lions.
Okay, Lions.
Big additions.
Lions, okay, lots of new additions. We have to count the Hiroyuki Nakajima as an addition because they wrote him off at the end of the last year. We've talked about him. Ken Togame, I don't know who he is even. Michael Nakamura, I do like. He's very comfortable now with the Cebu. The Giants was kind of a Twilight Zone situation for him. And Randy Williams, Enrique Gonzalez, these guys. When you see Enrique Gonzalez, now they gave him Brian Sikorsky's number. And his delivery is somewhat eerily similar to Brian Sikorsky's, except he's probably about 40 pounds heavier and about 5 inches shorter. It looks like they took Brian and put him in one of those sumo suits.
Oh no! You were just blowing people up tonight.
This guy can really pitch. Okay, Randy Williams, like him. Chris Carter's he's sort of like a Torero Jr. He's going to hit for average. He's got a little power. I'm not convinced he's going to be a really, really good player, but he might be productive. And now the guy I really like is Esteban Germán.
Yeah.
This is a guy who was very good when he was 24 years old with the Washington Nationals. I think it was the Washington Nationals. This guy had tremendous on-base percentages. He's got great speed. He is, let me just check my reference here. He's 34 years old.
Yeah, he's 34 is what I was going to say.
Well, how many 34-year-olds steal 94 bases in the last two seasons?
Only the fast ones.
Yeah, only the fast ones. And this guy is dynamite. Yeah. He's got tremendous plate discipline. If he needs to get a hit, he's gonna look for a pitch he can hit. If he needs to get on base any way he can, he ain't gonna swing at a damn thing that he doesn't want to swing at.
All right, departures.
He's gonna be the leadoff hitter and to play second base until Kataoka's whatever is broken on Kataoka is fixed.
Okay,
departures. Well, all the foreigners.
Yep.
So we had
Alex Freeman.
Oh goodness me, we had. Hoashi, who's with the Hawks, and Shumin Che, who's now with Oryx. We had Alex Grauman, who was just coming back and from capsule surgery on his left arm, but was looking good, but he's gone. After a year after the Lions kept everybody for no obvious reason, they trashed everybody. Jose Fernandez gone, had a good season. They didn't know it. D. Brown, they cut in the middle of the season. really sad story there. Brian Sikorsky, who was hurt and never really got on track and then went back to the States for surgery. But, right. Yeah, we'll miss you, Brian. Okay, now the rotation. Wakui, of course, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nishiguchi, based on what he did against people with his slider last, when his slider was revitalized by the funky baseball.
Funky.
Takayuki Kishi, who had injury troubles last year, but who is a great pitcher. Kazuhisa Ishii, who has still is a tremendous talent, who has a brain that's ill-equipped to deal with all the talent.
Just blowing people up.
Ken Kagame, I can't even talk about him.
He was having a good spring. He's a young guy. He was having a good spring, and then his last few outings haven't been good, and his ERA has ballooned to almost 6, and he might not even be on the club now. But early on, he was looking like a guy who was going to make the maybe could break the rotation. We'll have to see because
okay, Makita is back. He's in the rotation. Hopefully, this guy is a tremendous pitcher. I think Yusei Kikuchi is very likely going to be back in the rotation where he finished last year.
Probably.
He's a good kid.
He's working hard.
Yeah, he's got a nice. I like a lot of things about him. He just basically needs to develop and grow up, and I think Watanabe is going to give him that chance. Now they're going to have Gonzalez is going to be the closer, and this guy can throw smoke. It's going to be a really fun team to watch, and they made one of my favorite players, Takumi Kuriyama, is the new Senshu Kaicho, the players rep, and he's a great guy. He's a tremendous player. And really going to be a fun year for the Lions fans, and I am picking them first.
Wow. Well, I thought, you know, the return of getting Nakaji back for another season when they thought he was going to be gone, and then Hideto Asamura, they were getting him ready to play every day last year, and you know, he helped them in the playoffs, and you know, he really grew into a regular player, a regular everyday guy.
Okay. He had some growing pains during the season, but yeah.
But by the end, he was there. He was playing the role. The people's MVP, Okawari-kun, and his 49 home runs.
Fancy that.
They're going to be there.
He played for such a lousy team. Oh, wait, they weren't a lousy team. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And remember, it was this team and not the Hawks that led the league in scoring last year. 571 runs, and the Hawks had 550. So there's a good mix of veterans and a good mix of, you know, and youngsters, a good pitching staff. I think
they're a better offensive team this year than they were last year.
They might be, but I mean, Ginjiro he's having an awful spring at the plate. Yeah, I don't think he's even hitting his weight in kilograms, but we'll see. I think Herman fits into what they want to do in manufacturing runs. And although Chris Carter, you know, you talked about his injury and we don't know when he's going to come back, and hopefully it's not that long, and he can be productive when he gets there. But, yeah, I think they can pitch. I think they can hit. I think they can run, and I think they can play defense, and I also picked them to finish first. And so did Jason of the Japan Times. So I don't know how he got access to my notes here.
He's a mind reader.
No,
Jason,
just copying. Get your own. All right, the Marines.
Okay,
the
go ahead.
Of Chiba, yeah, the big additions, Josh Whitesell, who came over coming over from the Yakult Swallows, Yuhei Nakashiro, a pitcher, Takahiro Fujioka, a rookie, Seth Greisinger, he's coming over from the Giants, and Saburo Omura. Where did he come from? I guess, biggest departures are Bill Murphy, a left-handed pitcher, and then Jose Castillo, who joined them, you know, during the season last year and then disappeared. So,
Jose has people always love getting him and love getting rid of him. And it's a mystery to me because he's a sweet guy and he's a very positive fellow in the clubhouse.
And he works hard. He works hard and he comes up with, you know, enough production to help you win games once in a while. It's just not, he's not, you know, I know they want the import role is to help them win games and hit the ball over the fence and, you know, be this big power hitting guy, but, you know, you don't get a guy who's a middle infielder who's not going to hit the ball out of the park all the time, especially.
Yeah, he's not a Golden Glove guy, but he's
far from it, yeah.
Yeah, but he's a heck of a hitter for second baseman. And he is a positive guy. You know, if that's your hole, if you don't have anybody to play second base, you know, who's neither a Gold Glove nor a big hitter. I mean, Jose Castillo is your man. He's going to help you in lots of ways. But the Bay Stars dumped him for no reason, and then the Marines dumped him. Well, the Marines have a bunch of guys who can play, and I think they want to make Nemoto the regular now.
Yeah, and he's had a great spring.
Well, Nemoto, who is the guy who would have been the regular 3 years ago, if they hadn't decided to take cutbacks on Iguchi's salary? I don't know.
I don't know either. But
I don't know if that happened.
Nemoto, is hitting over 380. So he's having a good spring, and
he's impressing people. That'll impress people, whether it more than it's worth. But
So as Larry Rocha told us, I mean, the Marines won the title on the strength of the team that Bobby built, let's say. And Norifumi Nishimura got lucky in his rookie year, and they won the Japan Series, but they finished last year. And I'm not really expecting much more from them this year. They have Iguchi, who's, you know, still useful. They have Ishimine. They have...
He's a heck of a player, though, I think.
They have Nemoto. They have a good rotation. Let's go through that real quick. Yoshihisa Naruse, Yuki Karakawa. After that, I guess it's going to be Shunsuke Watanabe, Shingo Ono, Yuta Omine. If he's going to be there, and Hayden Penn. I'm not really even sure.
Well, Hayden is a guy I like, but the Marines have been hesitant about their foreign pitchers. They've basically looked at them as instant as Band-Aids, I guess.
Yeah, well.
And so, we've got a hole. Call up one of the foreigners and hope he can pitch and have his rhythm after not pitching for, 2 weeks. And then when they pitch one game and they kind of do miserably, and then they come back and they're feeling good, we don't need you anymore. Go back to the farm team and be ready. And
get out of here.
Bill Murphy had a lot of success for them, and Hayden Penn, every time I see Hayden Penn, he's been successful, so I'm kind of biased toward him. Mm-hmm. He's a ground ball pitcher. Well, I guess if you're going to be in the Marines, you want to be a fly ball pitcher. You have all that territory, and all those guys can fly in the outfield. But, I like the Marines. I like a lot of the personnel. I take umbrage that Nishimura got lucky, but in some respects that's true. He got lucky in that he was a new manager after a guy had been there 6 years, and people welcomed the change, and that helps.
Well, I think they lack a little depth in the rotation. I think they still lack some depth in the bullpen, and their obvious lack of power, because remember Okawari-kun out-homered the entire team by himself last season. So I think in the end that's really going to cost them, and I got them finishing in last place. Sorry, Marines fans.
Yeah, well.
But I could be wrong.
No, and human beings aren't wrong. We never make mistakes.
And as we know, I'm always willing to change.
Next week we'll have a different one. We'll have John's part two.
I'm going to renege after three games.
Three? That's quite a long time. I'm going to wait until the first inning.
Your prediction?
I'm going to pick them fourth.
Okay.
I don't know. I have
Didn't
no...
Did you already
have...
pick the team to finish fourth, though?
Did I?
I think you did.
I picked Oryx, right. No, I picked Nietzsche. I've got Cebu, the Hawks, the Fighters, and I picked Oryx. I don't know who I picked for it. I must have been I don't think I picked the Eagles to be anywhere. I was going to pick the Eagles last and pick the Merkworth. Just because the three teams at the bottom, I don't think I like any of them. Yeah. I like a lot of the players. I think Josh Whitesell's good. I hope Seth Greisinger can bounce back.
Yeah,
I'd love him to be the pitcher he is still plenty capable of being. And yeah, but if the Marines treat him like some other team treated him in the last couple of years, I doubt it.
Yeah.
If they treat him like the way they treated Bill Murphy and Hayden Penn the last couple of years, I'd be very surprised if he could succeed here.
Well, I think the races are wide open in both leagues. I think it's going to be really exciting, and I can't wait for Friday. Friday games are going to start on Friday. It's going to be awesome. I'm going to be blogging every day. which, you know, well, as we talk about opening day on being on Friday, what is one of your best opening day memories? Here in Japan. We're in Nara, here in Japan. It could be in the States, though, I mean, if you have.
Okay, we'll skip the John Montefusco story. Okay, I guess the best one was Donnie Kuroki outdueling Daisuke Matsuzaka at the Seibu Stadium. With all these, the Pacific League was starting before the Central League that day, and it would have been 2001, and it was Alex Cabrera and Derek May that were both playing in that game. Anyway, the Marines came from behind in the ninth inning and won, and all the Marines fans were, you know, wearing their black shirts like a bunch of Mussolini fascists out there behind the left field fence, hopping up and down. And because the Pacific League was starting a week early, there were a lot of reporters who didn't watch a lot of Pacific League games. Mm-hmm. And it was Matsuzaka. And I could see some of them, one of them who was the editor, was the chief of the Yomiuri Shimbun sports desk, his jaw was dropping. Marines fans, as the Marines rallied in the ninth inning, it was a tremendous sight. So that was one, I guess, Bobby Valentine winning his first game in 2004 at Shibu Dome also, coming back. I think the Eagles opened.
Yeah.
The Eagles had two great opening days last year, the one in Sendai on April 29th and the one in Chiba on April, when did the season start? I'm going to say it was April 15th, April 12th maybe. So a lot of great opening day moments. I hope we'll probably have one this year.
For me, it was when I got this job in 2005 and the side seats were being introduced at Tokyo Dome.
Right.
And the first game of the season was the Carp and the Giants, and got to the ninth inning, and Dan Nocelli, who was the new Giants closer, comes on to close out the game and gives up two home runs, including a two-run homer, and gave up the lead. And I remember my lead that day was, it turns out the Excite seats are in the Giants dugout because the manager couldn't sit still watching that kind of thing happen, and the Giants had a really ugly season, and finished fifth, but that opening day where
2005 was some nasty stuff at Tokyo Dome.
And the last time I think we saw Maselli, he was visiting Tokyo Disneyland after he got released, and taking his family to Tokyo Disneyland before he got on a plane and went back to the States. And
he didn't last. He was here about
maybe a month.
About 6 weeks.
Or a month and a half, yeah. My big opening day memory. So, guys, you should share your opening day memories with us. Send an email to yakyu@gmail.com. And you can send an MP3 to us at the same address. Just make sure you keep it less than a minute, and we'll play your question or comment on the show, and we'll address it. And we look forward to getting those from you. And I think we're going to have one for sure next week.
I have this amazing sense that we are.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you today. Can't wait for opening day on Friday. And before that, we're going to be able to see some Major League Baseball games. So it's going to be a great week of baseball.
Yep. Okie doke. Well, enjoy your baseball, and we'll be talking to you a week from now.
All right. Have a good one.